you've got to be really clear with the generation above and the generation below that anxiety, the cult leader, is not dictating your family's behavior. So it means that you have to do all the things that we talk about all the time, is that how do you make sure that you are helping your kids tolerate uncertainty, be uncomfortable, step into new situations? You've got to be very clear with your kids that anxiety is not in charge of the family.
Welcome to Season 6 of Flusterclux with Lynn Lyons, where we talk about a family's anxiety and all the big feelings, too. We tackle the serious stuff without being too serious, and I'm your co-host, Robin. I'm Lynn's sister-in-law, and I'm here to ask your questions.
And I'm Lynn Lyons. I'm an anxiety expert, speaker, mom, and author, and I've been a therapist for over 30 years. Parenting can be a flusterclux, and I'm here to help you find your way. I'll give you concrete steps to take and the words to say.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Robin.
What are we going to talk about today?
I think we're going to talk about cults.
Yeah, we do talk about the cult of anxiety.
The cult of anxiety. Yeah, we're going to talk a little more specifically about it. Because, you know, one of the things I say all the time is that anxiety is like a cult leader. The reason it's like a cult leader is because it comes in, it takes over your family, and then you want to do what the cult leader says because it makes things go more smoothly, right? If you're in a cult and you listen to the cult leader, things go pretty okay. What happens when you want to get out of the cult, when you don't listen to the cult leader, that's when things get a little bumpy, to say the least. So we're going to talk about being in the cult. We're going to talk about getting out of the cult. And we're even going to talk about what happens when you decide to get out of the cult and other people around you are not so appreciative of your desertion.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there are all these stages. Interestingly, I bet cult specialists would say there's a lot of parallel. Anxiety really is a cult leader. We did an episode on college roommates. So this was a perfect example where there was a college roommate who had severe anxiety and OCD, and she was rooming with a Flusterclux listener's child. And that roommate started telling her what she could and could not do, could and could not say, who she could be friends with and who she couldn't. And there was no self-awareness at all with Debbie's family of understanding that they are accommodating Debbie so much that they've kind of lost touch with reality in a way.
And also, just to continue a theme, how we keep dating ourselves.
Oh, gosh.
And Seinfeld, Sex in the City, and Flashdance. Just for the record, Robin, there is no current college student named Debbie. There's nobody in college living in a dorm named Debbie. Nobody.
Yeah. know, can I tell you something? When I said that name in my head, I pictured the mom from That 70s Show.
Yeah, right. Again, there we go again.
Okay, so there's this girl named Caitlin.
Yeah, there we go. You're exactly correct. And this is what I see all the time. Now, I will tell you that it is incredibly satisfying when a family comes to see me or I'm doing a talk and I introduce this concept. And some people haven't liked this concept. Some people have pushed back against this concept because they say that it's too scary. Like if you're working with young kids, the idea of a cult leader, and I tend to be like, okay, so you're just being too literal and maybe you're a little nervous that I'm talking about like, oh my God, cults, right? It's okay. But it's very satisfying when a family hears this and then they begin to recognize what's going on. It's just a way to understand how powerful this thing has been in their family and how hard it is to get out of a cult. I mean, there are people who specialize in this, right? Like going and getting people out of cults and trying to deprogram them. And really, that's a lot of what I'm doing with families because this thing is so generational that it gets passed down in a way that families are just doing these patterns without that self-awareness that you talk about. What we want to think about is when somebody who has been a part of this for a long time, when they decide that they're going to change their patterns or change their reactions, or they're not going to abide by the rules of the cult leader, it is really hard to find a different path sometimes because it's very unfamiliar. I mean, I would imagine in families, there are a lot of analogies of a family where somebody's never gone to college before. And so now somebody's going to make that move, or a family that's run the family business. There's been a family business for years and somebody decides they're going to leave the family business and go to art school or go to culinary school. It is really hard when you are in a family that does things in a certain way to then announce to everybody that you're not going to play along. You're not going to follow along.
Well, and that also could trickle down to the most mundane, because that's actually where it's more common, right? It's more common where you have referenced families that in order to keep things running smoothly, there's one restaurant they can dine out in, because that's the one restaurant that has the one dish that the picky eater will eat. So you accommodate by going to that one restaurant. That's the cult leader there telling everyone where they have to eat. So consistency is one thing. And then the other thing that came up recently in our Facebook group is we talked about, again, anxiety wants everything really serious. They want it serious. And that's why you always talk about play and humor and everything as a way to bring in a different energy.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you don't abide by these rules, there's going to be a price to pay. And what's interesting too is when people are in the cult of anxiety and they're doing what the cult leader wants, it becomes very normalized. Oftentimes people will tell me, I mean, I will say to families, well, knowing this, I've sort of presented this to you. What do you guys do in order to manage the worry, to manage the anxiety? And they will very offhandedly say, oh, well, we only go to one restaurant, or we make sure that blah, blah, blah. Or like we were talking about in the sports episode, oh, well, we just make sure that nobody's allowed to bring their dogs to soccer practice. Like they announce these things as if they're normal. Like, of course we've only eaten at one restaurant for 10 years, or of course we are not allowed to play this certain music, or of course we're not allowed to talk about this topic. I mean, there are some families I've worked with where you are not allowed to say the word anxiety in the family. And they'll say to me, they'll come in to see me and they'll say, well, we can talk about this, but we're not allowed to say the word anxiety. And they just sort of accept that that's the way it is.
I don't know if this is the professional term, but these are accommodations.
Correct. These are accommodations. And the role of an accommodation is to make sure that things go smoothly when we're talking about anxiety, because there are a lot of accommodations we put in place for other things. But the role of an accommodation is to make sure that things go smoothly. People just sort of begin to kind of accept. I've talked to families where they don't drive over bridges because one person in the family is afraid of bridges, or they don't go to the movies, or they don't do this, or they don't do that. And if you think about kids raised in families, what a child perceives as normal is really just what has been talked about and what has been done in their family. And oftentimes somebody gets out of the cult, right? Like literally imagine you get out of a cult and you're like, oh my gosh, people don't wear buns everywhere. But it's this idea that you step out into the world and suddenly realize that there are far more options available to you. And that's the freeing part of getting out of the anxiety cult. But it is not often a smooth exit, for sure.
I was talking with a friend about this, because you always talk about have goals in therapy. To be able to articulate what your family culture is and what was unique to your family so that you acknowledge that may or may not have been normal. This is how we talked about this. This is how we behaved around this. And to understand what that family culture was and whether or not it's worth perpetuating or disrupting.
Yeah. And the word cult and culture are the same root.
So when we come back, let's talk about just making sure that we're not in a cult. And then what do we do when we realize we are?
Okay.
Lumen is the world's first handheld metabolic coach. It's a device that measures your metabolism through your breath, and on the app, it lets you know if you are burning fat or carbs, and it gives you a tailored guidance to improve your nutrition, workouts, sleep, and even stress management. So how Lumen works is that you breathe into the Lumen device first thing in the morning, and you'll know what's going on with your metabolism, whether you're burning mostly fat or carbs. And then Lumen gives you a personalized nutrition plan for that day based on your measurements. You can also breathe into it before and after workouts and meals, so you know exactly what's going on in your body in real time. And Lumen will give you tips to keep you on top of your health game. I love the extra data that I'm getting about my health right now. Because for many women of my age, as we are going through a long chapter of hormone changes, Lumen's helping me use my body's data to make the best choices. So your metabolism is your body's engine. It's how your body turns the food you eat into the fuel that keeps you going. And because your metabolism is at the center of everything your body does, optimal metabolic health translates to a bunch of benefits, including easier weight management, improved energy levels, and better sleep, which is key. So Lumen gives you recommendations to improve your metabolic health. So what is metabolic flexibility and why should you care? Well, the key to metabolic health is something called metabolic flexibility. We love flexibility at Flusterclux, and that's where Lumen really shines. It refers to your body's ability to efficiently switch between using different fuel sources like carbs and fats, and there are preferred times to use each, and how well you can switch places you on the metabolic flexibility spectrum. So after getting to know you through your breath, Lumen gives you a metabolic flex score that you can track and improve upon. So if you want to take the next step in improving your health, go to lumen.me and use Fluster to get $100 off Lumen. That's LUMENDOTME. And use Fluster at checkout for $100 off. Thank you, Lumen, for sponsoring this episode. You know, when you're listening to a song on the radio and you just have this feeling that the song was written about you or that it was someone that you love trying to say something to you? Well, now imagine the power to gift that same incredible feeling to someone you love with an original song that actually is about them and about your relationship and that Songfinch writes just for you. Songfinch lets you create an original radio quality song inspired by your own life and the people that you love. It's completely unique, it's personal, and it lasts forever. I had the pleasure of creating a family song with Songfinch about our summer celebrations that we have every year. I knew it was going to make everybody cry, and it certainly did. I got to be honest, I was even crying giving all of the information and helping personalize my song with the writer that I chose. He absolutely delivered a beautiful acoustic song that captured exactly what I was looking for, and it was so fun to share with the family. So whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, a wedding or an anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. Don't waste another dollar on more stuff. It only takes 4 to 7 days, but that song will last forever. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free so you and the lucky person or people can listen to it anywhere, anytime. So go to songfinch.com/fluster and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, the URL is songfinch.com/fluster. Don't forget to share your song with us too in our Facebook group, songfinch.com/fluster.
Picture the thing that you've always wanted to learn, and now picture that you're learning it from the person who's literally the best in the world at it. It's fantastic, and that's what you get with Masterclass. I recently listened to Matthew Walker's talk on sleep and the importance of consistency with sleep. I loved Bobby Brown's Masterclass, gave me all these tips about putting on makeup because, you know, I'm in front of a camera sometimes and I want to look good, and Bobby was such a big help. So this year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass actually helps you do it. Like, I actually put on makeup the way that Bobby Brown taught me how to put on makeup. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass actually helps you do it. Masterclass offers over 180 instructors. So whether you want to master negotiation with Chris Voss, think like a boss with Martha Stewart, or maybe you want to learn how to just make your makeup look better with Bobby Brown or sleep better with Matthew Walker, with Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. I loved it. There are over 200 classes to pick from. New classes are added every single month, like a class that talks about your gut health. So many interesting things to learn. So every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's absolutely no risk. Right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/fluster. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/fluster. masterclass.com/fluster. Okay, we're back. When we're thinking about a cult, right? Remember, we're thinking about a group in which there are very rigid, strict rules about what's accepted and what's not accepted. And so if you are in this cult, if your family culture is a certain way, and then you decide you're going to break the rules, you are betraying what has been accepted practice for a very long time. For example, if you have a family where the culture is very much into drinking and you decide that you are not going to drink, you will get blowback from that. People will roll their eyes at you and they'll say things like, oh, you're so much better than us, I guess. It happens in so many different ways. When a family has been a worried family for a long time, the culture of the family is often that worrying means caring. So if you are worrying, if you are talking about what is going to go wrong, if you are making sure that the highly anxious people don't have to suffer any consequences, and that's the way your family operates, then when you decide that you're not going to play that game anymore, there's going to be some blowback.
And those words that those families say all the time, I just want you to be safe. I just want you to be happy. I just want things to go okay, right? It's like from this lens of concern is, I just don't want you taking any risks.
Right. I just want to make sure that everything goes okay. I'm just looking out for your well-being. I'm only thinking of you. And that's not true. I mean, I get it. It feels that way. Say you're in a family and there's one person who's particularly anxious. That person is going to use strategies or use language, use tactics to convince you to stay in the cult. And that language that you're explaining, that language that you're giving as examples is exactly correct, right? And then they will say things like, if you're going to be that risky, or even if you're going to be that stupid, or if you're going to be that fill in the blank, I guess that just means that you don't care about the rest of us. So basically, you're going to poison our anxious cult with reckless, unsafe, uncertain, uncomfortable behavior and demands. So it is very compelling in a family that has an anxious culture to keep doing the things that the anxious culture demands, because people bring out a lot of the heavy emotional weaponry to pull you back in.
The majority of families have some level of anxious culture. I would say that your family, I've observed it. I mean, you walk the walk and you talk the talk, but you've also had 30 plus years of practice incorporating this that most people don't. There's kind of like you on one side and everybody else on the other, you know, a varying degree. So I just want to mention that. I mean, it's not like there's a ton of families who don't have anxious cultures, because this is really relevant to most families at some level.
For sure. And it's not like I don't worry. When I handed my kids the car keys, it's not like I don't worry about my kids.
Of course you do. You just have a more practiced response of how you handle that, where the anxiety isn't leading your conversation.
Well, and the other thing is that I do not feel that it's my children's job to manage my worry. If they are doing something in a reasonable way that also has some risk to it, it is not my job to take my worry as a mom and say, you can't do this thing because I'm worried about it. That's the hardest thing, is that I can feel the worry and keep my mouth shut, right? So my son broke his elbow in two places, and he's better, but he just broke it a little while ago, but it's better. And then he says he's going to go snowboarding. Okay, so do I want him to go snowboarding with a freshly healed elbow? No, I would rather he not go snowboarding, but I am not going to say to him, I am so worried about you going snowboarding. What if you fell and hurt your arm again? That would be terrible. You wouldn't be able to work, blah, 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 blah. So what I say instead, I say, so you got the go-ahead that you can snowboard? And he says, yeah, the doctor and the PT said if I wear my brace and I go, I'm okay. And I'm like, all right, well, that's great. I'm so glad you're getting back to your normal life. And then on the inside, I'm like, please don't fall on your elbow. But I don't demand that he listen to my worry and change his behavior based on my worry. Because it was a reasonable decision based on all the information about his elbow.
Well, that sounds like a great conversation and it's really instructive. What if he had said to you, I haven't gotten the go-ahead, but I'm sure it'll be fine. And I know that's not really who your son is, but how would you have handled that if that had been the case instead?
I think I would have said, I know you really want to go snowboarding. I just want you to think this through, because the thing we say to my kids all the time when they were growing up is think one step ahead. So I just want you to make sure you're factoring in a lot more than your desire to go snowboarding right now. If you fall and hurt your elbow, this time it won't be a workman's comp case. Your decision, but think one step ahead and just make sure that you're thinking about this rationally and responsibly, rather than just based on the absolute understandable desire that it's fun to go snowboarding with your friends.
Sorry to make this show about you and your family, but this is actually quite interesting to me. You just gave an example. Would you have not said the second answer anyway? Did you feel like you had to just kind of zip it because he got a professional approval?
Yeah. No, I'll tell you, I could have gone either way. And maybe if we were talked to him, maybe he would be like, oh, I remember it differently, Mom. You were clearly concerned, right? He might say, I could see on your face that you were like really trying to be like, oh, good, have fun. And on the inside.
That's very true. You're like, no, I was as cool as a cucumber and I should text him.
So there are many, many times, and even though my kids are young adults now, where they are doing things that I'm sort of hoping go well. I mean, my son took off and drove across the country during COVID. I didn't know where he was. He would check in a little bit, but I think I told this story. I got a picture on my phone of my son in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, from my neighbor who ran into him in a restaurant, and I had no idea he was in Pennsylvania. So there are a lot of times where I'm just like, okay. Yeah, but I think the point I'm trying to make is that I keep my mouth shut a lot. Now, if they are doing something stupid, if they are taking a risk that is really beyond the pale, I'm not going to keep my mouth totally shut. But it's that balance of, can I make sure that my understandable, but not necessarily required or welcomed worry be inserted into their decision making? And that's the hard part of parenting.
Thank you for that. Because I think the rest of us sort of have to understand what our goals are, because the majority of us are caught in a varying degree of anxiety cult parenting focused on safety and focused on risk.
The other place that I see it show up a lot is like in terms of achievement that we talk about a lot. You're making a decision where I really want you to study more for that test, or I really think that you should go back to that job interview, or I really think that you should follow up in that way. So there are things of safety and risk, but there are also things where we feel like they're just not following through in ways that will lead to more success or more achievement or better grades or better outcomes in some way.
The cult of perfectionism?
Right. And just the cult of let's maximize better outcomes. Right? Let's just do whatever we can to maximize better outcomes. That's a really hard place to pull back from as well. The other thing too, I think that's really important to talk about is that if you have somebody in your family that's really anxious, so it might be a kid, but it might be a parent, is to really understand how often your family adjusts to your anxiety. How often your family doesn't do what it would want to do. How often your kid doesn't do something. How often your partner doesn't do something. How often does a kid not go to a event they want to go to, or doesn't go to a college that's far away, or doesn't go to a sleepover because the parent is anxious. And the way that the parent perceives that, the way the parent sells that, is that you're just a good son or you're a good daughter because you're not upsetting me. You're not doing these things, and it's just really important because it makes me feel better. And that's a really good thing to do for this family. That's another way that the cult just sort of dictates behavior.
That's so interesting you say that, because just my own life experience, I had observed that the docile sibling that the parents often enjoy for those reasons aren't necessarily the mentally healthiest siblings. I observed that in some family that I'm close to, and that makes perfect sense now.
Mm-hmm. You're being agreeable, and it's nice to be agreeable, but are you being agreeable because the anxiety cult leader is demanding or requesting this level of agreement? So you're going along with the cult leader. What happens in families like that is that kids and adults too don't really know what they really want or what they really like to do, because they're really beholden to the cult leader. And the messaging is really powerful. And this is how human beings operate. This is not unique, because we are social creatures. So the messaging from the culture really dictates a lot of the decisions we make. It takes a lot of courage to push back against the norms in your family, the culture in your family, the culture in your school, right? It takes a lot of courage to push back against that. If somebody's listening to this, right, and they've been listening for a while and they're like, oh, I recognize that I'm an anxious parent and I'm really going to do things differently. And that may mean letting your kids go to sleepovers, or taking the tracking app off your kid's phone, or letting them go on a camping trip by themselves, or whatever feels risky in your family. I bet you got some blowback from your spouse or your mother or your aunt or your whatever. The people that are in the anxiety cult do not admire or value your decisions that move you out of the anxiety cult. They don't see those as good decisions. They see them as that you're being a traitor to the cult leader, that you're pushing back against the way we do things. And it takes a lot of courage to not be in the state of anxiety in the family of anxiety.
Before we talk about getting out of the cult, I want to bring up a point that I love that you use in your work so much, of the specificity of language and the tool that that provides. Because you're all about people having parts to themselves. And when anxiety is the cult leader, and it might be specifically attached to one member of the family, everyone is ganging up on the anxiety cult leader, not the member of the family. And that's why making anxiety be a part of you that you extract and pull out and talk to. That's also why, like, the cult leader that everyone's following, it shouldn't be personalized. The anxiety should be personified.
Correct. And if there's an anxious parent that says, oh, I really don't want to continue this generationally, I don't want to be in this anxious family anymore, or I don't want to support this anxious culture anymore, so we're going to pull the anxiety out. We're going to give it a name. We're going to talk about the cult leader in a way that creates that separation. And that's really effective, like you say, because then one person doesn't feel attacked. It's not like you're demeaning that person. The flip side of that is when the anxious person doesn't acknowledge their anxiety and they say that thing that drives me crazy, which is, well, this is just how I am, or this is just who I am. And then there's no separating the anxiety cult leader from the person, because they're in a very tight relationship. So that's what you want to pay attention to. If you've got a family member that's saying, well, I'm sorry, this is just the way I am, and I'm not going to do anything about it, you don't have to attack them personally, but then you have to start changing your behavior so that you're not doing the accommodating, you're not doing the anxious behavior, and they are not going to be happy with you.
If you're talking about your family to somebody else and you use the phrase, well, this is just what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Little red flag.
Yeah. Big red flag from my perspective. Yeah. There are bigger red flags in life. But yeah, when people say, well, this is just how we do things. Think of families that really struggle with substance abuse, which again, many, many families are dealing with that. And if you've got somebody who is using substances, you've got somebody who's drinking alcoholically, and you're trying to help them have a look at their behavior or to see how much the family has to accommodate it. And they say, well, you know what? This is just what we do in my family. You know what? This is what we do. This is how we are. This is what we do. It's such a demoralizing message for other people to hear, because what they're basically saying is, I am not going to do anything to help make this change happen. And you've got to accept that oftentimes. The person who wants to stay in the cult is going to stay in the cult. That's the bottom line. And so the goal is, how do you and whoever else in your family wants to get out of the cult, how do you get them out of the cult? How do you support getting out of the cult, accepting that maybe grandma's going to stay in the cult? Maybe your partner's going to stay in the cult. Maybe your mother is going to stay in the cult. And how do you respond differently? And what are you modeling for your kids?
Let's take a break and we'll come right back.
Robin and I travel a lot. And part of traveling is that you learn that you have to compromise, right? So maybe you're not going to get the best seat on the plane. Well, you know where you shouldn't compromise? You shouldn't compromise with your health care. When it comes to your health, there's no compromising, everybody. Don't go back to that one doctor who didn't really pay attention to you, who rushed you through your appointments. Check out ZocDoc. This is the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. And you can search by location, availability, insurance. So literally no compromises here. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You don't have to wait. You don't have to be on hold with a receptionist. These doctors all have verified reviews from real patients. So the typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is just between 24 and 72 hours. That's it. You can even score same-day appointments. I have two young adult sons. They are always needing something, right? We've had broken elbows. We've had tonsils. We've had this. We've had that. If I were a young person, if I were a parent trying to help my young person find a doctor, this is what I would use. So go to ZocDoc.com/Flester and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/Flester. ZocDoc.com/Flester. If you are a mom who's trying to keep your calendar organized, keep your family's appointments where they need to be, then I'll tell you, the Skylight Calendar is a product that you ought to check out. You know how it is. Running a household can be pure chaos and it can be so stressful. This is why you need to check out the Skylight Calendar. It is going to make your life easier, mom. It really is. The Skylight Calendar is a smart touchscreen calendar and organizer for all your chores, groceries, to-do lists, and a great way to manage appointments to make sure they never overlap and they're never missed. It helps keep busy households on track so families can get time back for moments that really matter. The Skylight Calendar is so easy to use and to set up. It's not going to frustrate you. You're going to be able to get it going within minutes. It syncs events from other family calendars, including Google, Apple, Outlook. You can add events directly using the touchscreen or with the free Skylight mobile app. Updates to linked calendars will automatically appear on the Skylight Calendar at home. So no more worrying that you guys are going to forget something. No more cluttered paper calendars. It shows all family events together in one spot. The events are color-coded, so you can easily see what everyone has going on each week. When the calendar's not in use, you can turn it into a digital picture frame. It's 100% satisfaction guaranteed. If you don't love the Skylight Calendar, you'll receive a full refund.
They offer a 120-day money-back guarantee and free returns. You can't beat it.
I think the feature that I love most is the collaborative way we can all add to the grocery list. And then when I'm ready to place an online order, whether I'm at home or my office, I have that list and there's no more items that we forget.
So, as a special time-limited offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/flusterclux. That's skylightcal.com/flusterclux. Mother's Day is coming right up, so order today to get 15% off your purchase at skylightcal.com/flusterclux. Okay, so now back to the show.
Okay, Lynn, let's talk about anxiety cult extraction. Deprogramming?
Yeah, deprogramming, right? That's what they call it. Yeah. So let's just say that you have been listening to this podcast or you're learning about anxiety. It's hitting you right between the eyes, right? Or you're reading the anxiety audit. It was funny. I was at a school recently and they just did a book club of the anxiety audit. And I said, how'd you guys like it? They're all like, we all feel terrible because we all do these things. And I was like, yeah, that's the point of the book.
You shouldn't feel terrible that you're discovering more about yourself. Don't feel terrible.
Yeah. I said, well, I hope that you moved from feeling terrible to feeling like you're part of the crowd because welcome, right? We all do these patterns and now you have so much more information. So you've sort of decided like, all right, I'm going to break this pattern. I'm not going to do this anymore. So the way you extract yourself, you've got a few choices. One is that you can let the other anxious people and maybe the person who's sort of the family cult leader, you can let them know directly that you're really working on changing this pattern. Okay. Now it depends on the person. Maybe they'll say, oh, you know what? I am so proud of you. I could never do this, Debbie, but you go right ahead and do it. But maybe it's better for you not to announce what you're doing to the anxiety cult leader in your family. Maybe it's something that you're just going to do on your own. Maybe in your immediate family, your nuclear family, you're just going to start to make those changes. And the way you do that is that you start paying attention to accommodation. You start paying attention to the rules that have been in place in your family, sometimes for a really long time, that you are no longer going to follow. And again, you can let somebody know that you're not going to follow those rules, or you can simply by example, or simply by your own choosing, stop obeying them. What might that look like? Maybe the anxious person in the family says, well, you know how I feel about you driving at night. And so if you're going to come over to our house, you have to make sure that you're home by the time it gets dark out because you know how much I worry about that. And then at that point, you can say, if you choose, you can say, you know what, I'm really working on breaking some of those fears and breaking some of those worries. And I drive at night all the time. I'm going to come and visit you. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave when we decide that the visit is over, not when your anxiety or the anxiety decides the visit is over. So you can be that direct about it. Now, what do you think is going
to
happen?
I was about to say, yeah, that's not going to go well.
Right. So the person is going to be angry. The person is going to be disappointed. The person might use that guilt, might use, you know, call you careless and reckless, say, you don't care about me. Why would you want to put me through this? You know, I'm just going to worry about you. And if you are pulling out of this, if this really is your goal, then you're going to have to tolerate that person being upset with you. Because the way the anxiety continues is through people being upset and people not wanting to feel uncomfortable and not wanting to rock the boat and not wanting to push back against it. If you have a relationship with this person that you can say, I get that your worry and your anxiety are really powerful, but I want to see if I can do things differently. And I totally get this is hard for you, but this is about me doing things differently. And your worry, your anxiety is not going to be happy with me. And I'm sorry for that. I love you, but I'm not going to keep doing what your worry wants me to do. And the really great thing is that, say you're a parent and you've got kids, and maybe it's your mom or your dad or your sibling or somebody else, even your partner, that's been in the worry cult and you're pulling out, let your kids know what your intent is, because they know who the anxious parent is in the family. They know who the anxious grandparent is in the family. I say this all the time. Never, ever in the history of Lynn Lyons doing this job for 34 years have I asked a kid, who's the anxious parent? And the kid's like, I don't know. That's a good question. They always know. They are very clear about who the worriers are. So if you say to your kids, we're not going to follow the rules of the anxiety cult leader, we're pulling ourselves out of this cult, I think they're going to be kind of glad about that. And it's your opportunity to model responding and reacting in a different way. And as I say, modeling is really just the primary thing that you can do differently in your family.
Well, in that scenario, it was almost like the cult leader was coming from maybe a grandparent, for example.
Yep.
We've gotten a listener question recently where very much you have this scenario in the couple, that the mom said she's really trying to work on this, and she's been very disappointed that her partner kept saying, this is just who I am, this is just who I am, and isn't willing to play here. So that's a little trickier. What's your advice there?
It is a little trickier, and I hate that phrase. And if somebody says that to me in my office, I call them right out on it. I think in that situation, you are going to have to be consistent. The reason that people don't push back against that, or the reason that people sort of get stuck in that, is they really feel like they're going to put the relationship at risk. They're afraid the marriage is going to end. They're afraid that the partnership is going to get even rockier, or maybe than it already is. And the fact of the matter is that it could. It really could. When you decide not to continue patterns that you have recognized as unhealthy or harmful, not everybody is going to go along with it. So there is some risk in that. I think that what I would say to a spouse, a partner that says, well, that's just who I am, the response is, I don't think that either of us should accept this pattern, this cult leader, this culture is okay when it's not. And I am going to work really hard to not be a part of it. And I really want you to join me in learning about it, but I can't force you. So it's the same if you had a partner that was using something addictively, right? You had a partner who was addicted to alcohol or addicted to another drug. You would say to them, I am not going to continue to raise our children or have a marriage in which this pattern is dictating our lives. I'm going to do what I can to learn about it, and I invite you to join me, but I can't force you to join me. That's a really scary thing to say. The other thing too, though, is that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. So if you've got a partner who's anxious and they're working on it, so they haven't said to you, well, that's just the way I am, which again, annoys me. And they say, oh, but this is so hard for me. How am I possibly going to do it? You can say to them, I'm going to model for you how to get out of the cult. And whenever you feel like you want to join me, whenever you feel like you can sort of grab my hand and we'll do this together, I so welcome you joining me. And you can do this, and I'm going to support you. Imagine you're in the cult and I'm sort of reaching my hand into you and I'm just going to grab your hand and pull you out. I'm here to help you get out of the cult, even though it's really hard. So that sometimes can feel like a more loving and supportive way of doing it. If you have somebody who's sort of like, oh, I want to do it, but it's hard, versus somebody who's like, I'm not talking about this.
Right. And if they're not talking about this, then wouldn't you recommend that the spouse who's trying to get out of it, a therapist helping them really build boundaries along the way, would make this a little easier, because this would be very hard to do by yourself.
Really hard to do by yourself. You know, whenever you're trying to change a pattern, whenever you're trying to hold the line, whenever you're trying to get out of a family pattern, oftentimes it's really helpful to have somebody who's supporting you in that and somebody saying, yep, stay the course, stay the course. Yeah. And sometimes couples go to therapy. You know, we just did that great episode with my friend Michelle, where she talked about differences doesn't mean that a marriage can't work. But if a person is demanding that their culture be the only culture, then it makes it much harder to be a part of.
So Lynn, one final scenario that has come up a lot with our readers too, is that what if the cult leader is the child?
So that's probably highly typical of what we hear about and highly typical of what comes into my office. Because a lot of times when families come into my office, they're coming in because their kid is having trouble. And then I'm the one who sort of like is like, hey, guess what? It's not just the kid. But the same rules apply. And just as you started off this episode talking about the family that would only go to one restaurant or the family that was demanding that they only do this activity or don't bring the dogs to soccer practice or all that kind of stuff, same rules apply. It's actually easier when you start earlier. So as soon as you see this with your kids, the longer that your child has the impression, has the experience of being in charge, their cult leader being in charge, the harder it is to break the pattern. If you've got a child who is younger and you're seeing this anxiety and you feel like your job is to accommodate the cult leader, I highly recommend that whoever is raising that child, you guys work together to make sure that you start interrupting these patterns. And if you are in a family with a strong anxiety culture and you're seeing your child is really developing anxiety and there is a grandparent that is very anxious and is trying to thwart your efforts, I mean, I have grandparents come into therapy sessions all the time, so I can tell them like, look, this is what we're trying to do. But you've got to be really clear with the generation above and the generation below that anxiety, the cult leader, is not dictating your family's behavior. So it means that you have to do all the things that we talk about all the time. Is that how do you make sure that you are helping your kids tolerate uncertainty, be uncomfortable, step into new situations, and that you are not turning to the anxiety and saying, what do you think we should do? Which restaurant should we eat at? Where should we go? You've got to be very clear with your kids that anxiety is not in charge of the family. And that takes work. Start early. It's never too late. Thanks for listening. And if you found this podcast helpful, please give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find this information.
And if you'd like to dig deeper on any of these topics, we have specialized playlists on our Spotify profile, and the link is in the show notes. Topics like teens, depression, and OCD. Bye, Lynn.
Bye, Robin.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're Amy more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.